A diagnosis of breast cancer can cause a life-changing ripple effect of impact, affecting those we love the most and those upon whom we lean, for comfort and strength in the most challenging of times. My name is Aisling Hurley and I'm the CEO of Breast Cancer Ireland, and you're listening to More Than a Lump, a podcast that talks openly and honestly to a selection of guests about their very personal connections to breast cancer, be it through their career choice, their own first-hand experience of the disease, or through sharing the experience of close family members. My conversations will centre on how breast cancer has informed their perspective on life, love, family, health, their goals, and indeed their aspirations. Although each story is utterly unique, the one common thread that runs through each one is that breast cancer is more than a lump. This episode of More Than a Lump is proudly supported by Goodbody, a leading financial services firm that has been serving and growing client relationships for nearly 150 years. Breast Cancer Ireland is one of these strategic charity partners that Goodbody works with in an effort to provide educational resources and financial support. Soon after she completed a 10K charity run, Olivia Carpenter's husband Gavin gave her a big hug. As he held her close, he felt a lump in her right breast. He became alarmed and suggested that she get it medically checked. There began a journey for a mum of three, a journey that brought her into contact with a host of medical professions and ultimately to us here in Breast Cancer Ireland, where she has been an active ambassador and outreach coordinator, visiting schools, companies and community groups throughout Ireland, sharing important messages about understanding good breast health. In today's podcast, I focus on the early days of diagnosis in terms of the interactions with triage and assessment teams who ultimately reveal the diagnosis of breast cancer. I'm also joined today by consultant radiologist Dr. Deirdre Duke, who will share her own reflections on how she prepares to tell women that they have breast cancer. As part of our series of Women Minding Women, I attempt to understand how Deirdre prepares herself to impart this life-changing information to other women and their loved ones following their various scans and assessments in those early days. Deirdre also brings us an update on the fantastic new breast centre, which is recently opened by First Lady Sabina Higgins, and will explain exactly what this centre will mean for the over 10,000 women who will be seen there annually, and how getting this building opened was a true labour of love for her. Olivia and Deirdre, you're both very welcome to More Than a Lump podcast season two. I wanted to have you both in with us for season one, and I'm delighted that we finally have you now both in studio today. I've worked with you both in different capacities now for several years, and I'm familiar with the day-to-day roles that you undertake. But I suppose what I'm keen to understand and share with our listeners today is what drives you both to do what you do. Deirdre, I'll start with you. What brought you to a career in radiology?
Okay, so thank you very much for inviting me in here today. So I think first and foremost, most people don't actually realise that doctors work in the X-ray department. So I would have trained in medicine. I actually did my undergraduate down in Galway, and then I would have worked in hospital medicine and done various postgraduate exams, etc. And then I went into a subspecialty training in radiology. So just the same way that somebody else might decide to be a GP, somebody else might decide to be a cardiologist, mm-hmm. I decided I wanted to be a radiologist. So what does a radiologist do? Well, essentially, if you go into the accident and emergency and you haven't twisted your ankle and you go in for an x-ray, it's the radiographer will take the pictures and the radiologist will look at it and decide, is there an issue or not? Mm-hmm. And obviously, there are various aspects to radiology, plain films that I described mm-hmm. there, CTs, MRIs that people would be familiar with. And then the area that I would work mostly in is in breast imaging. And in breast imaging, the x-ray part is called a mammogram. We also have ultrasound. We also do breast MRI. And we can use all those machineries to biopsy lumps. Mm-hmm. So the training, so after medicine, mm-hmm. postgraduate studies, which was for me was 3 years. I went into radiology, which was another 4 years. And then 2 further years in the subsection of breast imaging. Mm-hmm. So why did I pick breast imaging? Really, I think the biggest thing for me was that there was a huge interaction with patients. Mm-hmm. I meet patients every single day. So I'm not just sitting at a monitor saying your ankle is fractured or not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm meeting mostly women, but also men every single day who are coming with various different issues with their breasts. I'm meeting them, I'm looking at their mammograms, I do the ultrasounds, and if necessary, I would go ahead then and do the biopsies as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I loved that interaction with people all the time. And it's a very exciting area of medicine. It is an area that has changed dramatically over the last 15, 20 years. And thankfully, it's an area where we're actually curing most women.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those things are, you know, what really draws me to it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. While it's a very emotional area of medicine, it's also a very satisfying one because, as I say, we have lots of ladies like Olivia here who have been through it, which is nice, but are out the other side and living normal lives.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And I suppose oftentimes, you know, I speak to people and they say, well, you know, I'll wait until I'm in my 50s when I can go for the government breast check mammogram. And sure, look, I'll see how I am then. Whereas we're constantly, and Olivia will back this up later on, we're constantly talking about the importance of every woman, regardless of your age, being breast aware. We do know that younger women, obviously breast tissue is white, it's active, and white shows up on a mammogram and cancer shows up white on white. So that is where your expertise is amazing because you can decipher, I suppose. And that's why we have a triple assessment system in place where people can be seen.
So you touched on a very important point there. And yes, the most important thing is breast self-awareness. What we would say to every woman is that they should examine their own breasts once a month, not every day, not every week, just once a month after their period. Because at that point, a lot of those hormonal changes have died down and they will notice the change. And if they get used to what's normal for them, they will be able to pick up a change.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I am, you know, amazed at what women pick up. Mm-hmm. Like when they're used to their breasts, they'll come in with very tiny little lumps. And the most important thing to look for is a discrete lump.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably that for us, the biggest indicator that there may be something wrong. Now, I have to stress not every lump is a cancer, but every lump should be checked out.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are aware, they will actually be, you know, I'm not going to be able to do it, but actually they can.
Yeah. And I think, Olivia, you yourself, as you know, taking on the role of an education and outreach coordinator, when you're going to speak to all of these women and indeed some of the men, it's very much about knowing what your normal is, know that baseline, so that if you spot an abnormality, you catch it early. And it could be one of those 8 signs and symptoms that we all talk about. But once you see that abnormality, contact your GP. You will be seen and your treatment outcome is a lot more positive.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I suppose, Olivia, it brings me on to you to understand, you know, back to those early days when you were doing that 10K run and you ran home and Gavin gave you that squeeze. What did you think?
Firstly, thank you for having me. I thought that I'm a bit of a blonde sometimes, Aisling. I actually thought that I left a tag in my clothing because I'm known for it. I could be running into a restaurant, one of the girls are going, Olivia, you have a tag, clipping it off. So I actually thought I left a tag in my sports bra. And that's what Gavin was feeling when he felt that lump. I certainly did not think that I was going to find what we found. You know, this really hard lump sticking out the right side on my nipple that felt like a stone that just, I mean, I wasn't breast aware. I didn't know my 8 signs and symptoms. Like I meet so many women, as you know, and, you know, like I always say to them, I always thought this disease was something an older person could get and certainly not something that would ever knock on my door. So I was really, really shocked when I discovered that I had the lump sticking out the right side of my nipple. In fact, I was very ignorant. I thought I might have pulled something while I was running my 10K because I'm known to be very competitive. My cousin had backed this up and I did that 10K that day in less than an hour. And I was convinced it was because I'd pushed myself around that 10K that I had pulled something. So that's why what I thought was why that lump appeared, you know.
And what did you do next?
Okay, so it was very different for me, Aisling. My dad had been diagnosed with stomach cancer 2 months before me. So my head was already in a tiz, if you like, because of dad. Dad had chemotherapy attached to him. So I didn't rush to the doctor. I wasn't one to rush to the doctor. I'm convinced now Vincent's Hospital has a poster of me saying, here she's again, she sneezed 10 years later. But anyway, on that Saturday, we were going out to see how my dad was doing because I'm super close to dad. And we went out and Gavin happened to mention to my mum that I had a lump out and sticking out the right side of my nipple. And I nearly killed all five of them that day because we were all so busy with dad. But anyway, mum came into the kitchen and she felt the lump and she said to me, Olivia, that doesn't feel right. Jesus, she said, I've had cysts over the years and I've never had anything like that. She said, if you get an appointment, please ask, can you have a mammogram? That does not feel right, honey. And I said, okay, mum, again, kind of fobbed her off, convinced in my head I'd pulled something after this run. Anyway, as I always say to people when I'm giving this talk, anyone who's an older sibling, they like to think they're a parent. Well, my sister is the hero of my story. Her name is Darina, and Darina's 9 years older than me. And Darina came in running into the kitchen about this lump she'd heard. And all of a sudden, everyone was going to the doctor and we were all getting it checked. And I said, Darina, I promise I'll make the appointment. I'll get there. So it kind of fobbed her off as well, because again, concentrating on dad, was not thinking of myself. So Aisling, I left it about 4 days, where eventually Gavin had said to me in the kitchen, that lump, did you go get it checked? And I said, oh yeah, that lump. And I went, okay, I'll make an appointment. So I rang my GP. Her name is the amazing Dr. Nikki Boyle. I tell everyone about her down in Glenageary. And I went down to Nikki and she felt my lump. And I kind of knew by her eyes, Aisling, her eyes had raised a little bit like myself, you know. And she said, Olivia, I'm going to send you to Vincent's, which she did. I had an appointment pretty much next day. So went down to Vincent's where I met with, in the breast clinic, I met with a GP and he felt my lump. And he said to me, it feels like a fibroadenoma. And I said, again, rabbit in headlights, what's a fibroadenoma? He said, a benign lump, a benign tumour. He said, look, Olivia, I have a colleague outside. I'll get him to come in and have a look. He did that. He went out. He got the second doctor. He came in. He agreed with the first doctor that it felt like a fibroadenoma, a benign lump, a benign tumour. At that stage, they were going outside. I had been asked questions like, was I sick? Was I sore? The normal questions. And I remember my mum saying to me, Olivia, if you do get an appointment, ask, can you have a mammogram? So I had brought up to the first doctor, well, what about a mammogram? Can you pick it up in a mammogram? And he said to me, how old are you? And I said, I've just gone 34. And the two of them at the same time, hand on heart, said, are you a bit young yet for a mammogram? So I didn't push it. They were going off outside to do whatever they were going to do. They were going to bring me back. With that, unbeknownst to me, my sister, the hero of this story, Darina had phoned a friend of hers whose name was Enda. He was an amazing surgeon in Vincent's private hospital. His name was Enda McDermott. Enda appeared like an angel. He had his blue scrubs on. And if you can believe this, Aisling, he had a bright pink bandana on his head. And you know, Breast Cancer Ireland, as I say to people, my pink car, I'm like an over 40 spinny driving around in it. But anyway, he appeared and a lovely, lovely man. And he said, Olivia, I had Darina on the phone. He said, I believe you have a lump sticking out the right side of your nipple. Would you mind awfully if I had a look at it? So we're zipping down again. At that stage, I'd high-five Gavin thinking, I told you there was nothing wrong. But anyway, till Enda appeared. Anyway, Enda felt the lump and straight away he said to me, Olivia, I'm going to biopsy that. So I said, okay. I said, look, Enda, I said, Gavin and I are heading out to New York. I said, when are you going to have the results? He said to me, look, I'll have them for you next Friday. He said, do me a favor, Olivia, try and put this out of your head. Anyone who's, as I say to the kids in schools, and I love the kids in TY, I say, anyone who's ever waiting on any form of result, it's easier said than done. Mm-hmm. So didn't I spend the whole time in New York ringing the hospital trying to get the results, which they don't give, but Pico here thought they might. So anyway, Gavin and I came back. It was on the Friday, I'll never forget it. We had shipped the poor kids off to the in-laws because obviously with dad being sick, that's where they had to go. And I missed them terribly. I really, really did. So I ended up bringing them down to Vincent's with me. Mm-hmm. And poor old Meggie was sitting outside and she was minding Adam and Lauren. Where this time the first time I met Enda, he was in his scrubs and, as I said, his pink bandana. But this time he was coming towards me in a suit and Dapper Dan, I called him. And he had a nurse with him, Maeve, really nice nurse. And he said, Olivia, would you mind awfully following me? He brought me into a room and I'll never forget it. He put the folder on the table. The only thing I remember about that feckin' room was the size of this folder. And he said, Olivia, I'm really, really sorry. It's breast cancer. So I was diagnosed with HER2 positive breast cancer. Aisling. So you can imagine my world there and then went upside down. Dad was diagnosed with cancer 2 months before me. And then I'm walking in to say, it's not just you, Dad. I've got breast cancer.
Mm, yeah, it's horrendous. What age were the children?
my monsters, and they are monsters, as I tell everyone, they were only 8, 10 and 11.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Very 8, difficult. 10 and 11. And Deirdre, you were at the coalface. You know, you possibly know these women that come through, the 10,000 or so that are seen on an annual basis. And of that, maybe 350, 400 present with breast cancer. You probably are the one that sees this cancer ahead of the surgeon or the consultant speaking to the patient.
So I think you mentioned a few very interesting things there. So the first is that, you know, she was examined by some medics and they thought this was going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And in fairness, based on your age, you were only 34. That was a reasonable thing to assume. Mm. But so in that scenario, we would usually bring them down and do a scan.
Mm-hmm.
I think things have just changed a little bit since 2011 for the better.
Yeah.
So that's, I suppose, the first thing to say, that, you know, sometimes what we think might be okay when we do the scan may not be, and vice versa. That sometimes somebody might present with a lump that we're all a little worried about, but actually it turns out to be okay. So again, just any lump, we should check it out.
Yeah.
But yes, so as you said, we get a lot of ladies in through our service, and the majority of them are fine.
Yeah.
There is nothing wrong with them. And, you know, I was just chatting with Olivia before we came in, and I was explaining to her what we find so often is the ladies in the waiting rooms who are jumping up and down and giving out and wondering, am I next, are often the ones that are okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's often the lady in the corner that's quiet, that has found a lump and probably deep down is a little worried.
Mm-hmm.
They're often the ones that turn out to have a problem.
Yeah.
But so when they come in, generally, and it's just a rule of thumb, generally, if somebody is over 35, we will start with a mammogram first. And usually if they're under 35, we'll start with an ultrasound. Now, the reason we do that is just because the mammogram is an X-ray test. And we only use X-ray tests if we know that it's going to benefit the patient.
Mm-hmm.
And in those younger women, it tends to be very difficult to see the cancers on mammogram, right? Because they have, their breast tissue is very tightly packed in together. So you have all this white stuff tightly packed in, and then you're trying to see something white in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one reason. The other reason is that, you know, the in younger women, it is less likely that what they have is a cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So you pointed this out, that, you know, you very correctly thought this is something that older women get.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reality is, the longer we all live, the more likely we are to get any cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a terrifying thing to think of, but that's the reality.
Mm-hmm.
So all cancers are more common in older age groups. So so just to get back to somebody coming in, so what happens is, I will say, well, just say for argument's sake, they've had a mammogram. So I will look at the mammogram, and in some, you know, in a lot of the women who end up having cancer at that stage, I know they have cancer.
Mm.
I can see it. It's there. And, you know, so I bring them in and do the ultrasound. Okay. So you're probably going to ask me, well, do I tell them?
I was on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah. So just, you have to put yourself in that woman's situation, right? So she has found a lump and she's here to figure out what it is, right? And I need to get a certain amount of information about the lump that she is presented with. So I need to be able to tell the surgeon, does it look like a cancer? Where is it? What size is it? Are there one or multiple lumps? Is it in one breast or two breasts? Has it stayed within the breast or has it gone to the lymph nodes? So I need to get all that information for the surgeon. Now, I'm not going to be able to get that information if I'm not going to be able to get her through the tests. So for me, it's very much concentrating on getting this lady through the necessary tests. Now you might say, well, that's really cruel, you know, that you're, but it, I have to get that information.
Well, you need all the
because
facts.
Because without that information, we can't say to her, this is what we're going to do. because, and I'm sure you've heard this multiple times, chatting to different medics and chatting to different patients, we're not dealing with one disease.
Mm-hmm.
Breast cancer is, it's like opening a packet of Skittles.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they're all Skittles, but they're all different colors.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them in a Skittle taste differently. When it comes to breast cancer, they are treated very slightly differently.
Yeah, and we've experienced that in talking to so many different people. So while Olivia's diagnosis was HER2 positive, you know, you have others who are HER2 positive, but their treatment plans are completely different. And we often hear somebody saying, oh, I had to have 12 weeks of chemo, and somebody else saying, well, I only needed 6. So yours must have been so much worse than mine. Yes. You know, whereas we now know, thankfully, through research and through, you know, blood tests, etc., that the, you know, it's a very sophisticated process now where we give personalized treatment plans.
Absolutely.
It's not one system fits all.
Yeah. So I have to get all that information, and I have to take a sample of tissue from the mm-hmm. person. So it's very much about building up a rapport
mm-hmm.
with the lady. And often the conversation could be about anything.
Yeah.
It could be about anything. Sometimes they might mention something. I was away last week. I went to a concert last night, and I might just chat about that.
Mm-hmm.
And we have healthcare assistants that work with us. And again, they would take up the conversation and just literally, I suppose, distract the lady a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if the conversation is going to be about, we think you have a cancer, and we think you're going to spend the next few months having chemotherapy and surgery and this, you know, that's hugely upsetting for
mm-hmm,
them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the other thing is that, so we don't tell them directly.
Mm-hmm.
We probably will give them an indication of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say to them, you're grand, don't worry about it. And,
yeah.
You know, we'll gently bring them down that road that, something
gather all the facts and let's have a look. Yeah.
And the thing is that, you know, I'm obviously a woman myself, mm-hmm. and you know, the thing, like, I'm a woman who works,
mm-hmm.
so if I get a text from the school saying, oh, we've decided to close the school 2 hours early on Friday, I'm looking at it going, how am I going to work this out? So, you know, I do find when I'm dealing with these ladies, I'm, you know, looking at them, and they might start talking about their personal situation, how many kids they have, etc. You know, so what's actually often going on in my own head is I'm thinking, you know, this lady, she has to figure all this out.
Absolutely.
And sometimes they're like this going, what, you know, oh, you have to do a biopsy. And I'm saying, what's wrong? And they say, oh, I have to pick up a child at 2 o'clock. And I'm thinking, oh, Lord, you know, she's going to have to figure out who's going to pick up that child.
Yeah. Yeah.
Next Tuesday,
mm-hmm.
and the following Tuesday,
yeah.
and the Tuesday after that again,
mm-hmm.
you know. But so I suppose, just to get back to it, so we have to this information that we need to gather,
mm-hmm.
and it is gently bringing them through all those tests. And the other reason we don't tell them is that we need an actual diagnosis. And what I mean by that is we take a piece of tissue, we send it to the lab to be tested. And that will tell us exactly the type of cancer it is,
mm-hmm.
right? So once that information comes back, we sit down as a team. And similar to this, we're all sit around and we say, so we'll say, if you don't mind me using yourself, so we'll say, Olivia Carpenter, she's 34. She has presented with a lump in her right breast. And the surgeon will say, this is what I felt. And I will say, well, I did the mammogram and the ultrasound and I found X. And, you know, based on that, my recommendation would be that she could have breast conserving surgery, or no, it's of a certain size, I'd recommend she has mastectomy. And the pathologist then will say, well, you know, without getting too medical about it, it's an invasive ductal cancer,
mm-hmm.
and it is HER2 positive or it's HER2 negative,
mm-hmm.
and all these things, it's like putting a jigsaw mm-hmm. together,
mm-hmm.
and then based on that we say, okay, the best treatment for Olivia is this,
yeah,
and then we move to the next lady,
mm-hmm.
so it is very much, as you say, it's that personal, and every single person is different,
yeah, yeah,
you know, so you can't just say.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, more so in the last 10 years, that what I have experienced is that, I suppose, 10 or 12 years ago when we spoke initially, before, as Breast Cancer was setting up, Breast Cancer Ireland was setting up, it was, you know, you could put 100 people in, 100 women in a room and give them all chemotherapy and it might work on 10%. Mm-hmm. So we now know that, you know, a lot of women may not require chemotherapy, and more less patients are requiring chemotherapy because of the newer drugs, newer targeted therapies that are coming out, which is excellent. So research is really advancing to that point. And as you said earlier, Deirdre, you know, we are getting to that point where, you know, we are transforming that disease into a treatable long-term illness. We are getting certain, through clinical trials, we're getting a cure for certain subtypes, and we'll touch on that later in a little bit. But I suppose, Olivia, for you, coming back to you and three kids sitting outside waiting for you, how did you tell them? How did you, like, you first of all had to comprehend and process the fact that you had been told you have breast cancer, having your dad at home with stomach cancer. Mm-hmm. How did you then try to tell the children?
Well, it was really hard. I will start with that. I remember sitting there after being told that I had HER2 positive breast cancer. And I remember in my head, it was just cancer, cancer, cancer. Mm. And I remember feeling I was going to fall off the chair and I wanted to get sick. That was the first, that was the first thing that came to me. And then Gavin beside me, who just is an amazing man, straight away looked at Maeve and said, "Okay, have you got a pen and paper?" She's looking at me, I'm looking at Enda, and I'm wondering, why is he asking for a pen and paper? Mm-hmm. But Gavin is such a practical man that, you know, I needed him there because I didn't have the words, you know, to be able to converse and say, I was trying to process the fact that I had breast cancer. But then I was also thinking, no, we got it wrong before. It was a fibroadenoma. So, you know, my dad has cancer. I couldn't have cancer. And then, you know, to have to go home and try and sit down with the kids and tell them. But initially, Gavin had to drop the children to my sister in Donnybrook and Darina had to mind them. And Gavin had to converse and tell her that privately. Mm-hmm. While, and then she had to process that while she was minding my children. Yeah. He came back to Vincent's. I was going off then to get my tests, you know, your bloods, your bones, the normal ones. And then I met up with Darina that afternoon and I was taking the kids. And they were like, "Mummy, what was happening in the hospital? Why were we told we had to go home? Why couldn't we stay?" And then we brought them home and I remember saying to Gavin, "I can't talk to them." Mm-hmm. You know, there was nobody to say, "This is how you talk to your children." Yeah. And I really needed somebody to do that because I had three small children and one going into first year. So her hormones were all over the place. Like she was going 12. And it was really, really difficult, Aisling, to try and find the words to sit down with your children. And, you know, you talk about the ripple effect of a breast cancer diagnosis. It's not just on the patient. It's not just on the mom. It's not just on your husband. It's on your children because, you know, my eldest daughter really struggles with her mental health and has done since I had cancer. So that part for me is really, really difficult because I didn't have the tools to converse with her about my treatment and what was going on with me because I didn't know from one day to the next what was going to happen with me. And she was asking me questions like, "Are you going to live, Mum? Are you going to be here, Mum? Because Granddad's sick. So, you know, Granddad's going around with this medicine attached to him. Are you going to have to do that?" And it was really, really difficult. Really, really difficult. So much so that today she's a young adult and she still battles that mental health part, you know, self-harmed. And, you know, she just couldn't get the words out for me back then. And I didn't have the tools to converse with her about breast cancer. So, yeah, I could have done with a bit of help. I do feel that is something that I would like to change. Yeah. Do you know?
I do. I agree with you. I think as a woman and you get that prognosis yourself, you're thinking cancer, okay, and everything is going through your head. Mm. Will I be around for Christmas? Will I be around for the birthday? Will I be around for... And then you all you have to then put mom suit on and try and converse and tell children about that who have huge amount of questions that they want. And because they're, you know, they're open then to social media, they're open to friends. And unfortunately, with 1 in 9 being a statistic in a lifetime, unfortunately, everybody does know somebody who has and somebody who has come through it, but others maybe who haven't been so fortunate. Yeah. And it's, you're trying to shield them to a point to say, I'm going to be okay. My prognosis is I go through this treatment and I will be okay. There are occasions when others get prognosis that is more advanced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I do think it is a tough one to have that conversation with children. And I suppose, you know, we spoke about it on another episode where we talk about, you know, it's all dependent on relative to your own family circle and mm-hmm. family way that you say things in a certain way, mm-hmm. depending on, yeah. you know, the ages of your children and you as a unit. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
But it's something that does, I think, need to be addressed, yeah. To give people that tool.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, and we mentioned how things have progressed in the research side. Now, thankfully, we're not just looking at the science of breast cancer, and things, thankfully, you'll be delighted to know, have improved a lot. You know, now you mentioned the breast care nurse who met with you.
Mm-hmm.
The breast care nurses themselves have advanced their role in their practice quite significantly over the years, and now they do have programs and information for ladies specifically around talking to their kids about cancer. So that is, you know, like, so not only have we improved on the research side and the science of breast cancer, but thankfully we have improved on those aspects as well, because to be honest, they're actually just as important as the science.
100%.
Because, and you probably will agree with this, for us, the lady's attitude to the cancer and to their treatment is absolutely massive.
Yeah.
Because if they know that they can get through this and that they will get out the other side of it, and if they believe that, and that is our job to make them believe that, they will do it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if they're constantly worried about it, or that they feel, oh, I am going to die, or this isn't going to work, you know, it does actually
impact.
Make a huge difference. And so we have thankfully improved on that. The other thing that we offer is and your kids probably weren't able to get it, but there is a thing called the CLIMB program, which basically is where they take in the children of the ladies with cancer and do a program with them, and it's around understanding what their parents are going through and developing the tools to deal with it.
Oh wow.
You know,
and so is that each breast center has this program, or is this a separate external program that's run?
So we'd say with us it's run through the social work department.
Okay.
They are the ones who would do this, and it would be the breast care nurses who would liaise with the social workers around that. And they're hugely important, and particularly for teenage girls. For some reason, teenage girls are the ones that really need a lot of support. I think it's possibly, and particularly if they're the eldest, I think they have this sense that, oh, mum is sick, so I have to take her role.
Yeah.
And there's that pressure of, oh, I have to
the
do
elder
what she
sibling.
Does. Yeah. And I have to look after these. Whereas, like, you certainly wouldn't have expected it, and your husband wouldn't have, but they inwardly think that.
Mm-hmm.
So they are, we do find that the teenage girls are the ones that take it, you know, they need a lot of help and a lot of work.
Mm.
And thankfully it has improved since your diagnosis.
But I mean, and I know, Olivia, for you for all these years, but it has been, that has been the hardest part, because I suppose your eldest was going into senior school. Senior school is big anyway for any child, because, you know, it's different in primary school, but once you get into senior school, you know, workload is different, pals are different, everything starts to open up, and you're going through your own diagnosis and treatment, and they're trying to function in this very strange space without you necessarily, even though you're there, but you're trying to deal with your own treatment, you know, which is tough. It's very tough. And I know I've spoken before about incidences where, you know, we get contacted as Breast Cancer Ireland, and while we are, our remit is very much about, you know, support for research and support around education and awareness, but people do come to us and say, you know, well, you know, my wife has been diagnosed, or I don't know how to say it to my children, I'm not sure what to do. This could be the partner or husband or whomever. And what I have found is, over the time, and Emma Hannigan, Lord of Mercy on her dad stays in touch with us, and he was telling me about a charity who's moved into him next door in Bray, who called Purple House. So I Googled them and researched, and I rang them. They were amazing. And I had one lady who has a stage 4 diagnosis, and she herself wasn't coping very well mm-hmm. with the prognosis and didn't know how to say it to her children. And I rang them because she had tried other avenues and had no luck. And immediately they said, tell her to phone us straight away. We'll help her and we'll help the children. And because they have a program there aimed at families and, you know, and the person themselves, which is amazing. But it is true. It is about that support, that the tools to try and educate or trying to teach them and speak to them in a certain way that they understand in a non-threatening, non-fearful way, mm-hmm. you know, about that diagnosis.
And it's incredibly important for the lady herself in that, you know, if you're worried about your three kids, well, every mother worries anyway, but mm-hmm. if you're, you know, if you can take some of that stress and worry away, you know, because they're coping better, it makes a massive difference. It really does.
On how the patient themselves gets through the treatment. Yeah. As you say, if you can keep it as positive as possible. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, and it's something, Deirdre, recently, in the last year, we were contacted by a gentleman who was 51, keen runner, came in on a Friday evening, had a shower, noticed something strange on his chest wall. Lo and behold, long story short, he has had a mastectomy and had breast cancer. He said that he went to the GP after about day 4, still noticing that this was there. GP was very, very dynamic and said, look, I think I'll just, refer you into a breast clinic. He went in, he said he was sitting there, and this was just coming into COVID times. So things were very much on lockdown. So there was, say, a couple of women. He was the only man sitting there. And he said afterwards, when he came out, he said, they were probably looking at me thinking, how did he get in here? And our husbands have to stay outside in the car. And he said, little did they know that I was in there for another reason. Wow. Now, he said at the time, he didn't think, he thought it was a cyst or blocked duct. He didn't know what it was. And he said that he thought it was candid camera when he was told that he was diagnosed with breast cancer, because he said, how in God's name could a man have breast cancer?
Yes. And actually, speaking of support, it's those men find it very difficult.
Mm.
And, you know, I've had male patients say to me, you know, it's quite hard to go down to the local coffee shop or pub and say, so how's it going? Oh, I actually have breast cancer. You know, like, because the reaction they often get from other guys is, oh, okay.
You know, like, how could you?
Exactly.
You know.
So it is quite tough for them.
Yeah, because this gentleman was saying to me that he had his mammogram. And again, I kind of did a tilted head going, how do you, like, I know with the breast, we can get the breast in and we have the clamp on. And
of course.
Like, as a man, you don't really have breast. As such, you have a chest, but you don't. How do you? Yeah. So tell me, how do they do? A male mammogram.
The exact same way.
Really?
They just, I suppose, they're dealing with less tissue.
Yeah.
So again, all of these things have progressed. And what I mean is, you know, the radiographers, like our radiographers now are specially trained in mammography. This is their area of expertise. I always, you know, sometimes we have ladies coming in saying, oh, I had a mammogram before and I didn't really like it. I said, you know, I can guarantee you our girls will get you through it because they're just so brilliant at what they do. So yes, they can even image male patients.
Absolutely. And he has subsequently gone on and had a mastectomy. And one of his key things is, he says, when he does go down to the pub, is he talks openly to his male friends and anyone that wants to listen to him to say, I did have breast cancer. So men, you need to be aware, you do have breast tissue in your chest. So, you know, you do need to check yourself. You do need to know what's normal. If you spot that abnormality, you need to go get it checked. I said to him, Tom Cruise had breast cancer, and he was going, oh, really? So I said, you're up there with the best. You know, but it is interesting. But Deirdre, even now coming on, we touched on it briefly earlier, the new breast centre at Beaumont Hospital. I mean, that is a phenomenal centre with all the state-of-the-art imaging equipment. I mean, you've gone from, you know, 2D mammography up to like really high-class 3D.
Yeah, so the new breast centre, so, you know, it's a three-storey building on the Beaumont campus.
Mm.
And, you know, we're so proud of it. So on the lower ground floor, we have our imaging areas. So as I described it, the breast imaging section. So we have three mammography rooms. And as you mentioned there, each of those have these what are called 3D tomosynthesis machines. So we touched earlier on the fact that younger women have the breast tissues really tightly packed in together. So what are these machines? So rather than taking one picture, right, Instead, the machine kind of gently swings across the breast and it produces a series of, for want of a better description, slices through the breast.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can imagine, it's the difference between taking, let's say, a photograph and taking a short video clip, where you're essentially, the first picture is at the top of the breast, the next one is a few millimeters below that, right down through. So what that does is, if you buy a cake, right? So you could buy a fruit cake and you look at the fruit cake and you say, okay, in there, it looks like it has some cherries and maybe a little bit of mixed peel and a few raisins, right? But when you actually take the cake and slice it, you then really see what's on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a better idea of how much of each thing there are, right? So you mentioned before that your mom had cysts.
That's right, yeah.
Right? Mm. So cysts are these balls of fluid in the breast. They're nothing to worry about. But unfortunately, women can have a cancer and have cysts.
Mm-hmm.
So we could have a breast that's packed with all these cysts, and somewhere in the middle, there's a little cancer. So this machine allows us to, not physically, but using imaging to slice through the breast. So we can look through them slice by slice and say, there's the small little.
So much more accurate.
Much more accurate, much better detail, much better detail of size of the lesion.
Mm.
You know, because sometimes we could say, oh yeah, there is something there, but we're not really sure what the size is. Or maybe the lady has come in feeling something up here, but this will give us a better idea of maybe another little lesion in the same breast. So much more accurate, much better for the younger women. Where I work is a symptomatic unit. So it's all women who find a problem and come in. So we tend to be dealing a lot with women between the ages of 30 and 50 would be our biggest number. So they tend to have this dense breast tissue. So we have three of those rooms and we have two dedicated ultrasound rooms. And I mentioned before that we can use this machinery to guide the needle. So if we can see it on ultrasound, we do the biopsy using ultrasound. If, you know, if we can only see it on the mammogram, we use the mammogram machine. So in this unit, then on the next floor, we have eight consulting rooms for the surgeons. And in it, we have a dedicated counselling room. You mentioned that you were led down the corridor by Enda McDermott to this room. And it's a beautiful room and has been, as you know, has been beautifully decorated. And then on the top floor, we have offices for our clinical nurse specialists, who are an incredibly important part of the team. Our clerical backup, and then we have our clinical trials unit. Because we are constantly trying to improve. And actually, you know, listening to your story from a few years ago, you know, it makes me realize we have actually made progress.
Huge progress.
It's fantastic.
Across all aspects of it. You know, so the radiology is improving, the treatments are improving, the surgery is improving. As you mentioned there, that we're doing giving less chemo, and we're only giving it to those who absolutely
really need it.
But in the same way, we're trying, or the surgeons are trying to do less surgery. And what I mean by that is, you mentioned that you had treatment first, isn't that correct? Chemo first.
I had chemotherapy first. Yes.
That was to reduce the size of the tumor, so that they just needed to remove the area and. You know, all these things are to try and, you know, make things
minimize. Yeah.
And the other thing then that has come on, and they actually see their patients in the clinic as well, are the plastic surgeons. Because, and again, just to stress, the majority of our women do fine and get better and go on to live normal lives. So it's very important that they look the way they want
absolutely.
To look. So the plastic surgeon and reconstructive surgery is an area that has increased dramatically, because it's all about surviving with a good outcome. isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even on touching on the breast centre that was opened earlier in the summer months in June, on the top floor in that clinical trials area, we had, there's a new trial that has, that has, that began over the summer, which is a HER2 positive trial, called the Shamrock trial. And that is looking at a fourth generation drug being administered along with chemotherapy initially, but then de-escalating that need for chemotherapy, so less of that toxicity. Mm-hmm. And they are really aiming for 100% response rate, which means, you know, tick box cure. Phenomenal. For that particular form of breast cancer. You know, as Professor Hill would always say, you know, if pre-COVID, now, you know, everybody worked together globally and we all of a sudden got vaccinations for COVID. Mm-hmm. If we could only get to that point that we could get vaccinations or some forms of treatment for the different subtypes of breast cancer. Yeah. But there are a lot, as Deirdre said, it's like the bag of Skittles, you know.
Absolutely.
There are lots and lots of subtypes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just you mentioned there, and so with a lot of these clinical trials and for a lot of patients now, they are getting their chemotherapy up front. So what happens then is we take that lady and we do an MRI scan on them. So we're looking at how the lump looks on the MRI scanner, and then they get their treatment. We bring them back at the end of treatment and again scan them on the MRI. And it's quite amazing to watch, because often it's completely gone.
Wow.
You know, it's just incredible too. And you know, it must be so great for the ladies to feel it reducing in size.
Yeah.
You know, that has to be quite reassuring. Not saying that it's not a walk in the park to go through chemotherapy, but at least you know that it's working.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, so to get, you know, so I suppose just in the radiology, then we're involved in, I'd say, the initial diagnosis. So all that information for the surgeon, I have to get all that. Then the information on how their treatment is going. And then the other aspect that we will be involved in is using other types of scanners to see, you know, for only a small subtype of or a small subgroup of women, to see if it has spread elsewhere. So things like CT scans and bone scans. So that's all within the radiology.
Within your remit there. Absolutely. And I suppose then just touching again, Olivia, on your role as an education and outreach, I know from you over the years, love being out there, because you felt that you didn't know the signs and symptoms. You weren't breast aware.
No.
And your whole thing was, can I just get out there and get as many young women and women of all ages just to be more breast aware, knowing what the base is.
Absolutely.
So that if that abnormality arises, you know, the outcome will be a lot more positive. I mean, you have some fascinating stories of, you know, even being in schools where you've given the shower card out having done the demonstration.
Yeah, I've chased lollipop ladies down the road in my pink car with those shower cards, and that's the truth. I mean, I just love the job. I love the role that I have. I love meeting the children. And, you know, like you always tell me, they're our ambassadors, our young ambassadors. And, you know, they go home and they ask their mom. I always say to them, when you go home, I know sometimes you don't want to sit around the dinner table, but do me a favor, ask your mom what her 8 signs and symptoms of breast cancer are. I guarantee you she's like me. She probably only knows one. And as you know, we've had a few people come forward. One in particular, a school came forward where one young lady went home, gave the shower card. Her mom actually asked for the shower card. The mom did the test in the shower and the mom found a lump, and she'd early stages of breast cancer. So when I got that email last summer, as you know, I forwarded on. I was just blown away. I was delighted because I am very passionate about it. And I wish I had the knowledge at the time when I was diagnosed. I wish I asked the questions. And I really, really cannot stress enough that it is so important for young women and men, as I say to the lads when I see them in my talks as well. It's so important that you have good breast health. Know your own normal as you're getting older, because our bodies are changing all of the time. And it's so, so important that we're all breast aware. Mm-hmm. So I'm very passionate about my role as outreach coordinator.
Yeah, and you and all the others. I mean, we have 6 coordinators who span the entire country. And this is a free service available to, you know, women, in whether they're students in school, teachers, companies, community groups, sporting groups. You know, it's available. You just have to contact. And if you contact Breast Cancer Ireland, We will put you in touch with the relevant coordinators. Yeah. So Olivia and Deirdre, thank you so much for joining us today. I think, you know, our listeners will be well informed. We'll have a much better understanding of the whole radiology process, as well as you, Olivia, and your journey, and you as an education outreach coordinator. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Goodbody, Ireland's longest established stockbroking firm, supporting initiatives that have a lasting impact. The information in this podcast is based on the personal stories of those we have chatted to. If you are concerned in any way, please contact your GP immediately, or you can contact us at breastcancerireland.com.